what's going on, Chicago? What's up? What's up? What's up? It's Sunday mornings with Brandon Johnson. It is the hottest political program on this side of heaven. So good to be with you all on this fine Mother's Day. Don't let the rain shock you. We appreciate the rain. We do. Because we know what comes as a result of that. We get to grow. That's what we try to do on this show every single Sunday, is to put us in a much better position to grow. And so we thank God for the rain. That means life has some meaning. Life can carry on. I know for those of us who want to enjoy 70 degrees and sun every day, you know, this is a little bit of a drag. If you had baseball plans or soccer plans or just general plans hanging out in the sun, you're going to have to reschedule that today. It's just simple as that. So you're going to have to, you know, reimagine today, maybe get a little bit closer to folks that maybe we don't spend enough time with. So, of course, I don't want to go too far into the conversation without saying happy Mother's Day to all of the mamas out there. Those of you who tune into the show, I do have some questions. That's right. Thank you. Apparently, the reopening policy has pretty much just been expedited. That was a lot of people. I'm going to talk about that today, though. We'll put that up as a poll question. Are you comfortable with the reopening timeline? Are you comfortable with our society reopening? How about that? Let's talk about that today. Are you comfortable with reopening? There's some hard deadlines that have been set. And those deadlines are just a month or two away. I mean, some people, of course, around the country have seemed like they have never closed. But are you comfortable with reopening? Are there beneficiaries of a reopened society? Are there winners? Are there losers with a society that is reopened? Hey, if you're just tuning in for the very first time, this is Sunday Mornings with Brandon Johnson, flying solo today to see how well I do it by myself. As much as I'm constantly reminding my co-host, Candace, that this is my show, let's just see if I'm going to eat those words. It really means I need people to talk to today, because it's just me. And look, I'm cool with that. I don't normally talk to myself, but I would much rather talk with other people. But I always have company, though. We have, you know, individuals that make sure that we're actually on the air. So Dylan is with me. So if things start to get a little bit weird, he'll make sure I don't bomb. What's up, Dylan?
Of course. Yeah, no, you won't bomb. You never bomb, man.
I appreciate it, man. And guess what? By the way, too, though this is the hottest political program on this side of heaven, particularly on weekends, I will be filling in for Santita Jackson tomorrow morning. So those of you who listen to WCPT all day, every day, stay with me. Don't not tune in because Santita's not going to be on. I want you to stay with me. And those of you who follow me on Sundays, get up tomorrow morning. I'm on from 6 to 8 a.m. It's going to be early. There's a lot of things to discuss. I'll have a couple of hours to do that. Dylan, you won't be there, though, will you?
No, unfortunately not. But if you come through on Tuesday, you already know I'll be there. I'll be there that day.
Yeah, so 773-763-9278. The phone lines are available to you. We'll put the poll question up. There's a bunch of things that I want to cover today, so we'll try to get to all of them. We'll get to your calls today. Are there appropriate gifts that husbands should get for their wives on Mother's Day? Like, I try to keep it simple. I actually think birthdays are a big deal, so I try to save, like, the good stuff, because I'm always trying to impress my wife. I am. I don't know why. You would think after all these years that I would be secure enough to know that she ain't going anywhere. But I always think there's that small possibility that if I don't, you know, keep a strong game, like, not that my wife would leave me. I mean, that's not what I'm getting at. But, you know, just like not that into me anymore.
I think a happy wife is a happy life.
See, that's all I'm saying. So I'm always trying to impress her. I am. Like, every day, I just, like, wake up, and I just, like, let me see what I can do to impress her. And most times, thank you, that's more of an appropriate crowd for my taste, the pandemic. I know people believe the pandemic is over. Yo, chill. chill. Like, people getting close and breathing on each other again now. Like, chill. No, I'm for real. And later in the discussion today, I promise you I'll get to that. But I'm not looking for gift ideas per se. But I just want to know, especially once you have children, like, at what point do you start to kind of transition, like, the focus on Mother's Day? And this is probably going to cause me to, like, lose, like, the three fans that I have. And I'm not saying that I'm not doing anything for my wife today or my mother-in-law. I have amazing sisters. They always tune in, except for one of them. But she has an excuse. But Joy and Evelyn, they're great. Happy Mother's Day, by the way, to all of my sisters. Joy, Evelyn, and Andrea, and Ashley. I appreciate you all. Great. I have awesome nieces and nephews. They're great people. But at what point do you start to transition Mother's Day towards your children to start thinking about, hey, what are you all going to get for your mom? Because every day my wife wakes up, she wakes up as my wife. When we go to bed as husband and wife. So I'm celebrating my wife. Now, don't misunderstand what I'm getting at. She is the mother to our children. And so I want to celebrate that. And I asked my daughter, God bless her, Brady. I said, have you given some thought to what you're going to get your mom for Mother's Day? Because she's your mom after all. And so my 6-year-old looked me in the face and said, well, I'm thinking about making her something because I'm broke. That's what she said. But she says, I have $18 because Meemaw gave me $10, but I don't want to spend all of my money. I'm not raising conservative children. I promise you, I'm not. I'm not. But that's what she says. She thinks she's going to make. She's not even sure yet. Today is the day. Anyhow, I don't know. Maybe there's something appropriate to get to give. I'm going to do my best to impress my wife today because I try to do that every single day. But I do thank all of our mothers who really hold it down. I mean, for our economy. I mean, mothers who withstood and, you know, a very horrific year. I mean, when we're talking about frontline workers, when I ask this question about reopening and are we ready to really reopen and to allow for society to get back to what people have constantly referred to as some level of normalcy. Are we really, really ready for that? And as we look to celebrate mothers today, when it comes to every economic indicator in this society, black and brown, but black women in particular, are at the tip of the spear as it relates to that which is the most horrific parts of our economy. So whether it's wage theft, wage loss, low wages, working in industries that often do not care for the workers who actually deliver the services. So we're talking about nursing, nursing homes, long-term care facilities, fast food restaurants. And so though I'm being slightly facetious about how we look to celebrate mothers, the question that I have as relates to a reopened society, are we really celebrating and gifting mothers with the type of life that they deserve? And so there will be people who will find some cards, balloons. My wife hates balloons, by the way, and they're not very environmentally friendly either. So I got her a balloon. Big stuffed animals, whatever you decide to get for your mom today, or maybe it's just a phone call. Or maybe you just do some reflection today because maybe your mother transitioned early and she's no longer with us. My mother died of a very, very rare heart disease. She was just 50 years old. It's hard to even imagine, what that was like for my father and all of us growing up having a mother who was ill for a good portion of her 40s and, you know, eventually, you know, was not able to, her body just rejected all of the treatment that she received. And we were able to go as far as to qualify for a heart transplant. And it just, her body rejected it. It was a very rare heart disease. And she suffered for a good period of time. And so as much as there is some level of comfort of knowing that her life ended with purpose and meaning, it was a very difficult time for my family. And sometimes I do think about the struggle that she had with her health and why it's important that we are fighting for healthcare workers. We're fighting to make sure that healthcare is a human right during a time in which my mother struggled the most. My father was unemployed, having no health benefits, and still trying to purchase medicine for 30 days that would cost $700, if not more. And that was just for one prescription. It was almost unbearable at times. And then to make things that much more dramatic and hard, while she was fighting this rare heart disease, she was also suffering from breast cancer. Very, very difficult time. And when we talk about a society that is desperately chasing after some level of normalcy, for many families, that which we have described as normal has been abnormal for generations. So I'm on social media. You can check me out there. Share the broadcast. I'm going to take a break here in just a second. But I want to spend some time just talking through a little bit about the benefits of reopening and whether or not there are benefits of a reopened society. And if there are benefits, who's likely or most likeliest to claim those benefits? Because for me and my family, and though my father eventually regained employment, some bogus stuff that went down in his job, thank God for union, because they fought to make sure he kept his job. But by the time my father was back on the clock, the back pay was there, the benefits were restored, but by that time my mother's condition had worsened, and she was not able to recover from it. What I'm also factoring in, though, as we think about the celebration of just life, and to all of my brothers and sisters, as we celebrate our mother today, and we think about and remember her legacy, she left this planet, this earth, with a very, very clear purpose in life. To not just make sure that her children were in the best possible position to be stable and to succeed, but she wanted community to be better. When I think about Mother's Day, when I'm approached with Mother's Day, it's not just simply about food, fun, you know, and dessert. And all those things are nice. But the contribution that women are making and have made throughout our existence has transformed society as we know it in so many different ways. However, the benefit of the work and the love and the effort and the purpose that women pour into society, what's the return on that? So that's why I'm asking, is there a benefit of reopening, particularly when we think about the economy and the areas of the economy in which people seem to have the most impetus to push for a reopened society? Can we talk about the rest of this when we come back? It's WCPT 820 AM, where the facts do matter. It is Sunday mornings. My name is Brandon Johnson. Candace Castile is enjoying her son and her mother and grandmother and her life today. So it's just the two of us. I don't know. Maybe SWV or Escape will join us at some point. I'm sure you all watched it last night. I promise you, I won't get too far into the verses. I'm just saying, though, SWV, they real grown. Like, grown. I'm coming back, though, y'all. Good morning, y'all. 8:20 a.m. on the Facts Matter Sunday mornings. Hey, what's up? What's up? What's up, Chicago, Cook County, Illinois, America, our worldwide listeners? You've tuned into another live broadcast of Sunday Mornings with Brandon Johnson. I'm your host, Brandon Johnson. I'm really honored and humbled to be with you all this Sunday, as I am every Sunday. I do thank you all. For those of you who are checking us out on social media, thank you for sharing the broadcast and liking it and placing your responses and comments in the comment box. I appreciate that. Again, don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning from 6 to 8 a.m. We'll be up nice, bright and early. And I'm filling in for Santita Jackson. I mean, she is absolutely dynamic. Her show is awesome. So I'm very grateful that I'm entrusted to hold it down for those couple of hours. So a lot of things to discuss. And so check us out. So maybe I'll give you a little bit of a sneak preview of some of the things that we will cover today. I know before the break, I mentioned the versus battle. And, I'm a 90s dude. Like, that's the era in which I sort of came into my own. You know, think about high school and all the different things that we went through in high school. The first, I guess, probably one of the first, if not the first, one of the earliest videos of police brutality. That's the 90s, Rodney King beating. And just to see like the full trajectory of, police brutality, LAPD, was under a great deal of scrutiny at the time. And what's interesting enough was that the former chief, I believe, of LAPD was brought here for a time period. But just the 90s was, it's just fascinating to know that I've finally reached an age in my life where the music that I grew up listening to is considered old school now. Like I'm officially old school now, not old school. Like, watch out there now, bro. That kind of old school brother. Watch out there now. That uncle. Y'all know who I'm talking about. And that's not just for black people. Brown folks, y'all got an uncle. You know, certain music come on in the backyard. Had a couple of Coronas, and now he want to dance with everybody. White people, y'all got that uncle too. It's like once that Pour Some Sugar on Me comes on, he just, the party get lit. Is that the name of the song, Pour Some Sugar on Me? White people listen to that? Probably. I mean, I listen to it. This is a bad show. It really is. 773-763-9278. But yeah, it was kind of cool just to see, or just to hear songs from the past, and watching people who are your age now trying to perform as if it's the 90s still. Now, you don't ever have to worry about that with me. Like if somebody says, "Hey, listen, let's do something from our childhood," I'm going to probably say no, because I just think that things from my childhood should just stay there, or even my teenagehood years. I don't think it's really good for my back, my shoulders, my knees. And now that everything can be recorded, if social media was around in the 90s, I probably would not be an elected official. It's almost for certain. Not that I did anything too wild, but I did enough to call into question my judgment. I mean, I was young, so thank God social media did not exist then. But it's this line of what the 90s were for the current generation of leadership and how much it's having some level of impact on not just how we view the world, but how we see our leadership being expressed in this moment, and whether or not our, childhood or even our young adulthood, did we experience enough or develop enough to be able to make decisions today that can benefit tomorrow? I know that's a lot. What I'm getting at is that when I think about reopening, the question that I'm constantly asking myself, can tomorrow be better than yesterday? Can tomorrow be better than yesterday? And, as it is becoming increasingly clear that people are done with this pandemic. They're just done with it. But the people who have been most impacted by this pandemic, not just in terms of sickness and death, but the politics that have emerged out of this moment, I don't believe, and I'm not saying that I speak for everybody, but I don't believe, just based upon the evidence that's in front of me, that the people who have been most impacted are done with the pandemic, because the pandemic is clearly not done with us. So whether or not we want to be done with it, the impact of the pandemic is still having a lingering impact on our communities, particularly Black and Brown communities. What's interesting, too, is that there's a couple of states that have discussed, and we'll talk more about this tomorrow morning, but there are a couple of states that have discussed removing the unemployment benefits from basically from being available to people. Because apparently businesses, particularly restaurants, can't find anybody to work because people are benefiting from the unemployment benefits. I'm not making this up. So that people are finding it more beneficial to remain on unemployment than they are to actually return to a low-wage job. Now, I know some will make the argument, this is why we need to get rid of the so-called entitlement programs, or, you know, these unemployment benefits, because it makes people lazy. No, people make economic decisions like everybody else does. And the fact that you have an economy that doesn't pay better than unemployment, that's a problem with your economy, not with that individual who has made a pretty decent mathematical equation or come to some good mathematical conclusion. It's actually why, you know, I believe that if we actually want to have a society that is economically stable, we've had this conversation before when I filled in for Santita Jackson the last time about what is essentially the term universal basic income. That without some sort of economic baseline for society, you leave people vulnerable and susceptible to exploitation. And this is why I'm raising this question about whether or not we are ready to reopen. It's not just about whether or not this pandemic or the virus has been brought under some control and some degree of submission. What I'm really raising is there is a political paradigm in this country that rests heavily in the city of Chicago and Cook County that is quite mean-spirited and short-sighted. Mean-spirited in that we're told in Chicago to get over our trauma, get over our pain, get over our isolation, just get over it and power through it. And that our so-called resilience and our ability to get over it and get through it, that becomes our ticket out. Not the eradication of the barriers that are there, but to be able to thrive, put that in quotations. If you're watching me on social media, you would see the quotations. But not just so our ability to thrive and make it is contingent upon our ability to beat a system, also known as white supremacy. And that becomes the prize. So by the time you're 18, it all boils down to the number 22. And if you can get a 29, now you're really on your way. And oh my God, if you get a 32, through all of that, you win. You win 4 years at an institution that's going to charge you $40,000 a year to be there. And then you win that prize, and then you come out from that prize with a piece of paper and over $100,000, maybe $200,000 in debt. When I say mean, when I say burden, This is what I'm talking about. None of that has been, I shouldn't say none of it. This political moment has been brought to us by struggle. People believe in us when we say that we are experiencing pain. And that to alleviate that pain, you can't just simply ask us to readjust our position within the pain so that you don't feel it on that side. But just don't sleep on your right shoulder. If it hurts, sleep on your left one. At least you got one. What I'm saying, sisters and brothers, is that whether July 4th is the day or not, there's an entire paradigm and a mechanism in place to return to a particular status that makes everybody else who is used to being comfortable, it keeps them comfortable or it realigns them with comfort. While the rest of us who have been experiencing pain and exhibiting the manifestations of that pain, people had to see it. And they want to turn away from what is very obvious and glaring to them. And so whether it's the way our healthcare system works, whether it's the way our jobs and our economy works, how about our public schools? People have been fighting for democracy in this city for how long? And then someone shows up and says, okay, I'll take that fight to the fifth floor. I believe in an elected representative school board. And then they get there and they realign themselves with the very people who oppose democracy and justice. So our fight and our struggle for justice and to be heard is still very real. Now, the one benefit that I believe that has come out of this moment, and whether we're ready to reopen or not, I'm very pleased that there are some folks who have run for office with an ideological frame that speaks to not just our pain, but how we actually resolve and solve it. And so when it comes to Mother's Day, paying attention to our health, to our healthcare needs, our demands, it's critical. It is absolutely critical because lives are at stake as a result of people not paying attention to our pain. You got that for me, Dylan?
Yeah, I got you.
All right. Check this out, y'all. So what you're going to hear is, I'm going to play a quick clip from
paying attention. My sisters in service, Congresswoman Presley, Underwood, and Adams as part of today's panel. I sit here before you as a mother, a single mother of two. Zion, my eldest child, was born at 23 weeks gestation versus what is considered a normal pregnancy at 40 weeks. When I was early in my pregnancy with him, I didn't think that there could even be a possibility that there could be a complication. I became sick during my pregnancy. I had hyperemesis gravidarum, which was severe nausea and vomiting. I was constantly throwing up for the first 4 months of my pregnancy. Around 5 months, I went to see my doctor for a routine prenatal visit. As I was sitting in the doctor's office, I noticed a picture on the wall that said, "If you feel like something is wrong. Tell your doctor." I felt like something was wrong, so that's what I did. I told my doctor. I told her that I was having severe pains, and she said, "Oh, no, you're fine. You're fine. Go home, and I'll see you next time." So that's what I did. I went home. 1 week later, I went into preterm labor. At 23 weeks, my son was born, 1 pound, 3 ounces. His ears were still in his head. His eyes were still fused shut. His fingers were smaller than rice, and his skin was translucent, a black baby, translucent skin. You could see his lungs. He could fit within the palm of my hand. We were told he had a 0% chance of life. The chief of neonatal surgery happened to be in the hospital that morning and saw my case on the surgical board, and she decided to try to resuscitate him. It worked, and for the first month of his life, Zion was on the ventilator fighting to live. For 4 months, he was in the neonatal care unit. The doctor who delivered my son apologized. She said, "You were right, and I didn't listen to you. Give me another chance." 2 months later, I was pregnant again, so I went back to her. At 16 weeks, I went for an ultrasound at the clinic and saw a different doctor who was working that day. I found out again I was in preterm labor. The doctor told me that the baby was going to abort. I said, "No, you have to do something." But he was adamant, and he said, "Just go home. Let it abort. You can get pregnant again because that's what you people do." My sister Kelly was with me. We didn't know what to do after the doctor left. So we saw a chair sitting in the hallway. My sister picked up the chair and she threw it down the hallway. Nurses came running from everywhere to see what was wrong. A nurse called my doctor and she put me on a stretcher. The next morning, my doctor came in and placed a cerclage on my uterus, and I was able to carry my baby, my daughter, my angel, who is now 20 years old, my son, who was saved, is now 21 years old. This is what desperation looks like, that chair flying down a hallway. This is what being your own advocate looks like. Every day, black women are subjected to harsh and racist treatment during pregnancy and childbirth. Every day, black women die because the system denies our humanity. It denies us patient care. I sit before you today as a single mom, as a nurse, as an activist, and as a congresswoman, and I am committed to doing the absolute most to protect black mothers, to protect black babies, to protect black birthing people, and to save lives. Thank you, and I yield back.
That was Cori Bush, the congresswoman out of Missouri. And when I say that her comments impacted me, that's an understatement. And as we, and I'm trying to tie it all together, you all, so be patient with me, because this is a struggle for me. I have to be honest. You know, my mother has been gone longer than I've known her on earth. And so when I think about her health and what ultimately led to her death, just not access to it, we couldn't afford it. When I think about Corey's story, When I think about all of the stories that have compiled over this last year, I'm asking this question about reopening, not about whether or not you should have masks on or whether or not you should be gathering again. But the economy shutting down gave this country an opportunity to do some deep, deep reflection. I don't believe we've done enough of it, quite frankly. And then to be ridiculed, especially those of us who've been fighting for education justice in this country, here in Chicago, that people are uncomfortable with our tactics. This sister had to throw a damn chair down the hallway to get people's attention. And you mad about tactics? You think people want to cut up every single day in order to be heard? You really believe that people want to organize instead of protests and boycotts and go on hunger strikes? You think we just get up every single day saying to ourselves, selves, let's go out there and let's shut down traffic. Let's go on strike. But whenever it comes to the self-determination or when it comes to the conditions that black people face, that brown people face, that particularly black and brown women face, that somehow we're supposed to make people comfortable about the discomfort that they're causing us. And you mad about tactics? If it were not for tactics, black folks would have never been liberated in this country. Tactics have led to legislation changing in this country simply because we want to be heard. And it's not that we want to be heard because we're just seeking attention. Like, know the difference. We want to be heard because we can't breathe. So no, I'm not sprinting back to some level of quote normalcy. And I don't mind kicking it. That's an Escape reference, I think. That is Escape, isn't it? I actually like SWV. I really do like their harmony. Though Candy is a gorgeous woman, by the way. Getting distracted again. We should take a commercial break. Hey, Pam, can you hold on? We'll come to you right after the break. It's WCPT, 8:20 a.m. We're raising this question about reopening. Are we really ready for reopening? In other words, are we ready to go back to being ignored? It's Sunday Mornings with Brandon Johnson. Get up, y'all.
Oh,
folks. All right, welcome back. It is obvious who I think won last night. I appreciate what Escape did. There was a moment, though, last night. If you were watching the Versus, we'll get back to the seriousness of this show. But I have a tough time staying serious. I think it's a way in which I cope. But DeBrat came out and made a cameo, you all. And look, those of us on the West Side, like DeBrat, that's our sister. And she did shouted us out last night, by the way, too. She, you know, West Side. I mean, through and through, Chicago. But she gets up on the stage, you all. And this is what I mean by, like, you can't get me to do the stuff that I used to do 20 years ago. She gets up on the stage, and I think the spirit moved her. And she decided to stand up on the couch, which where the ladies were sitting. So she's up on the couch, and she doing her thing, right? And it was great. And then I think she realized, I got to get down. I'm sorry. And it was at that moment when she was getting down, I'm saying to myself, see, that's it right there. That's why don't let these people trick you. Now, for the first time in my life, because Dylan is from a different generation, when the song was being played, I was literally able to say, you don't know nothing about that. And like, that's what you live for. You live to get old enough to say, what you know about that? You don't know nothing about that. And Dylan was like, no, I don't. So, shout out to both Escape and SWV for bringing back so many memories. But when DeBrat tried to get down from that couch and they had to help her, and she got off that stage as fast as she could because she realized that she got away with something. Don't do that. If someone ever asked me to perform from the 90s, you best believe that I will be sitting down when I perform. I will. 773-763-9278. Hey, Pam, you've been holding. Thanks for holding, and welcome to Sunday mornings. What's going on, sis?
Thank you, Brandon, and thank you just for your expression. Thank you so much. So I never mind holding. Happy Mother's Day, of course, to all who are celebrating, and to those who don't have their moms, a heartfelt, but you have to appreciate the time that you spent with your mom. Brandon, I understand Representative Bush, and I have a similar story. I'm not going to tell it, but I had to advocate for a friend in the same manner that Bush had to do. Now, it wasn't related to pregnancy, but I think probably almost every black woman has a story like that. And so that in itself states what's wrong with this country. For the pandemic and reopening, I'm really not trying to hear it, Brandon, because as you reopen, people are still suffering and hurting. This pandemic exposed the failing model, business model, economic model, capitalist society of this country. Now, when the pandemic first hit, and I don't want to forget, everybody wants to move on. No, we need to do some analysis, Brandon, because a lot of the poverty, the hurt, the pain is going to carry on to those essential workers, right? Those who, almost 600,000 people dead because of a pathological lying president and a Republican party that supported him. So let me just talk about what the pandemic exposed. It exposed that our CEOs, our businesses, our corporations, they're all really, they're not in alignment with trying to keep this country healthy. They had the opportunity to shine, Brandon, to step up to the plate, to say, here's what we're going to do. Let's lay out a full plan for closing, and then let's talk about how we're going to gradually get through this. They didn't do it. They worked people to death, first forced workers to go, right? Didn't want to provide safety precautions, had to make them do that. And then wouldn't give people family leave when they contracted COVID.
Or pandemic pay, also, hazard pay.
Thank you. And then get this, Brandon. How many times have you been told with your credit, Brandon, well, you need to have about 6 months to a year's salary reserve.
Right.
You need to do better. You need to have this. The corporations, what did they have available? The businesses. They had nothing. 30 days until the pandemic, they were crying broke. Do you remember that, Brandon?
I do.
I want people to feel the pain because we, I'm on the west side of Chicago, working class folk, we're still feeling the pain of trying to come out of this pandemic. And then you had farmers throwing away food and milk. At the same time, you had massive lines for food. Brandon, how in the world do those two things go together in this so-called great country? Oh. I mean, do people understand? And then you still have the wealthy people that aren't speaking up enough, not doing enough. I see what the poor working class people are doing, middle class. What are the wealthy people going to say? Where was the strategy to say from the billionaires to say, look, we're going to infuse a lot of money into this economy until it rebounds? And now that we're coming out of it, we have the lie that the Republicans are perpetrating. Well, people don't want to go back to work because they're receiving unemployment checks. I'm just lastly going to say this, Brandon. I've been listening to The Economist and been reading some reports. They say that there is not even any data to support that. Hmm. Now, some people may have personal little stories.
Sure.
You know of someone.
Right.
But that's not true overall. Give people health care. Give people child care. Pay people a decent wage. This economy thrives because the CEOs and the business owners want to make all the money, and they want to pay people minimum wage of $7, $10 an hour. So you got to build your brand, your company, from breaking the backs of other workers. Some of the businesses don't need to come back. If you can't pay decent wages, allow your workers to get proper health care, then you need to rethink, oh, should you really be in business? Because it's not working, Brandon, and you have eloquently stated it.
Well, so have you. Thank you. And our live studio audience appreciates you and the folks on social media. So thanks for the call, Pam. Check me out in the morning. I'll be hanging out for Santita Jackson and try to enjoy the day today, okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I think to Pam's point, Dylan, you know, this economy, as I said, I mean, it's very mean. It's vicious. And you had teachers' unions around the country fighting for, you know, some very basic demands for children to have access to a nurse, psychologist, psychiatrist.
Just make sure that the HVAC systems,
just proper ventilation.
Right. To make sure that they're not spreading COVID between each other and the teachers.
Because that would lead to like more disaster in their communities. Right. I remember when the pandemic first broke and there were some young boys playing on the playground. And they were chastised, right? Like, go home, get out. You know, you're going to get your mom, your grandmother sick or whatever. And I actually think those boys had a better analysis at that time about the pandemic than the chastisement that came as a result of them being outdoors.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even spread outdoors, apparently, so.
You know what I'm saying?
They should have just kept playing at
right.
that point.
And in fact, you saw some of the boys actually had on gloves. They had on masks, right? Some of them had them down by their chin, but they were conscious enough to know that there's some safety precautions that you have to take. And so now here we are a year removed from that. The only thing that has changed is that you have a vaccine that's available, still no guarantees there, given the number of people who have not been vaccinated, particularly in the communities that have been hardest hit. But now all of a sudden it's like July 4th or bust. And all I'm simply offering, or what I'm trying to offer, maybe I hope I'm doing a decent job of trying to articulate this today, is that there are clear winners and losers to a reopened society. And typically in this economy, those who lose continue to lose if they're not heard. What Corey was saying was, Congresswoman from Missouri, hear me. If you don't, I might have to engage in a tactic to get you to pay attention. Don't ridicule, do not despise the efforts of those who are unheard. Remember, it was Dr. King that said, rioters, these are the voices of the unheard. People don't just get up and shout and yell for the sake of shouting and yelling. Do not try to equate the manifestation of frustration to the actual ailments that are occurring. Because someone will try to or attempt to say, well, if people are poor and they're frustrated and they're hurting, how does this behavior equate to the pain that you're describing? To me, it's a very irresponsible way at looking at someone's trauma. Right? People had more of an understanding for Dylann Roof and his so-called pain. Like, what does his ailment and pain have to do with nine people who were at church? Right? So what I'm saying is that whether you think someone's pain or frustration is legitimate or not, when people manifest or they rise to a point of shouting, it means that their breaking point actually occurred before that happened. I'm no psychologist. I'm no psychiatrist. I don't have enough student debt to even be labeled as such. But I do know, like, human development. And I do know that when people have reached an end, their breaking point tends to happen before they actually manifest their frustration outwardly. And so when the Congresswoman Cori Bush's sister threw the chair down the hallway, because what other choice did she have in that moment? It's life or death. It's life or death. And people are choosing life. And why wouldn't they? That even with difficult days in front of us and even behind us, and living in the midst of it, people still overwhelmingly choose life. And all I want our politics to do, I want our politics to be better. I don't want our frustration to be theirs. Or, you know, you'll be okay. Don't placate. Don't humor me. Certainly do not chastise the movement. Movements make leadership happens. And so I do want to, like, lift up all of the women today who, whether you are a mother or not, when I think about reopening, I'm thinking about nurses, overwhelmingly women. I think about teachers, overwhelmingly women. Restaurant workers, overwhelmingly women. Just go on and on, just go down the line. And when you think about a reopening society, as we celebrate mothers today, are we really ready and prepared to hear the mother's cry, the mother's warning? Mothers have experienced tremendous loss when it comes to school closings, when it comes to violence in the community, when it comes to just disenfranchisement of voting. We have to do a better job as a society in how our politics deliver for women, for mothers, for women. And Tori, I disagree with you, by the way, on social media. Escape did not win. They did not. And you can tell the difference, too. Like SWV, most of those ladies are 50. I think the youngest one is 47. Escape, they're in their kind of mid early 40s. So they still trying to, you know, people in their early 40s, we still trying to figure it out. We still think we 30. Once you reach 50, you just know. Like SWV, they was singing Sit Down. Escape was up there with Moves and stuff. Like SWV, they did a routine at the very end. like that's some grown woman stuff. I'm going to wait to the very end. I'm going to just save my energy for this one dance, and then I'm going to go home. That was one point. What's the sister on SWV? I guess they interrupted her. She's like, what's going on? She's like, nothing. I just want to sing our song. Like, it's getting late. Like, she was just ready to go. And you got DeBrat up there standing up on couches and stuff. Man, I better go somewhere and sit down with all that. That's too much. Anyhow. but really, so I'm going to raise and pose these questions. You know, are we comfortable with reopening? Who benefits from a reopened society? How about this one? This is what Pam was actually getting at. Have we learned any lessons from this moment in our history? So in other words, have we had the right analysis? I got to get out of here. I want to thank our sponsors. I want to thank the Chicago Federation of Labor. I want to thank the Chicago Teachers Union Foundation. I want to thank Cook County College Teachers Union, SEIU, ATII, Illinois Federation of Teachers. I want to thank, of course, the Friends of Brandon Johnson. Listen, you all, keep up the good fight. Do me a big favor, though. The Lord says the same. Sunday comes, I'll be here. But do me a big favor. Check me out tomorrow morning. No matter how difficult the fight is, no matter how people ridicule our so-called tactics, I want you to remain faithful. God bless you all. Happy Mother's Day. Love you. What I want for my or heavenly body can be out here bogus with